teams are set. The picture is crystallizing for the 2024 NFL season. Scott Pienowski joins the show to break down his fantasy team power rankings for this draft year. Oh, man. I mean, incredible episode coming your way. The Detroit Lions, how high are they in our rankings? The Houston Texans, it's easy to get excited, but how excited should we be? The offense that I can't stop thinking about, and Scott Pienowski is not going to talk me down from, all of that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, May 7th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Scott Pienowski. Scott, buddy, it's been too long. How are things?
Things are great, man. I'm excited to talk to you today. Look, as people know, I work at Yahoo. I cover a lot of different sports. I'm not just a football guy. So all that great work you did walking up to the draft, getting us through the draft, you know, I was involved on a limited basis. I did some draft coverage the week of, but I've been doing a ton of baseball. I've been doing a little bit of hockey, did some March Madness with Frank Schwab for a few weeks. So to me, like a lot of people probably, the fantasy season starts when the draft happens and there's no more speculating. Where are these quarterbacks going? Where is Marvin Harrison going? You know, is the running back market, is it really going to get pushed back as far as we think it might? Now we have everybody, basically all the chairs have been filled. I mean, there'll be some surprise cuts along the way and injuries and stuff like that, but we know where people are playing and it's time to get excited. As you know, it was a legendary draft. All these quarterbacks taken, all these ecosystems changed. And it's, to me, now it's, I'm starting to, you know, get into some leagues. I picked my Scott Fish slot, you know, and movie and all that stuff. So again, you're a diehard 12-month, 365-day-a-year football sicko. I am like, you know, a 7 or 8 month sicko. My sicko season basically starts today.
Yeah, you're a much more versatile man than I am, Scott Pienowski. But you're right. This is really where the fantasy season begins for most people, because as you perfectly said, like the butts are in the seats here. Mm-hmm. This is where most people are going to be. Most ecosystems are set. And that's a great time to kind of get this kicked off, Scott, with your favorite exercise here, going 1 through 32, the NFL fantasy team power rankings. Now, these are not power rankings like the who's going to be the best team in the NFL, the worst team in the NFL. It's not that exercise. This is specifically, Scott, I mean, the best way to probably say it is my favorite word, ecosystem, right? Which you already used so far. So you're as sharp as ever in terms of the podcast lingo here, Scott. Basically, these are 1 to 32, the best ecosystems to invest in fantasy football. Is that the best way to sort of table set here?
That's a good way to say it. Or if I said to you, I'll give you all the players on one team, what team would you take? Probably not the New England Patriots. Probably not the Carolina Panthers. You might want the San Francisco 49ers. You might want the Eagles. And I tip my hat to you, Matt, because this is the piece I used to do before the season started. And you said last year, you know, are you going to do that at some point in the spring? And our editor, Jason Kaplak, is like, that's a great idea. Yeah, let's do that. In fact, Jason's mad at me because when he saw the preliminary list, he saw that I had the Bears above the Packers. He's all excited. And I realized, no, that's actually not how I feel. I'd rather have, I feel a little, now they're next to each other. And I don't know that we're going to talk Bears today because Andy Barron seems to have a, you know, a lockdown on everything Caleb Williams right now, which is fine with me. But yeah, it's basically, you know, who has the most fantasy juice, which is whether you want to say, which is the ecosystems we want to draft into, which players are going to get command the most draft capital when those drafts start starting in earnest. July, August, and some people are drafting right now. It's basically which teams are the most fun for fantasy. Even a little bit of rewatchability that comes into it too. Who is, like, if a team's playing on Monday night, I'm thrilled to watch that team. And versus some of these other teams, they're the classic, you know, oh, okay, we have Tennessee and Carolina on a Thursday night. I may not be as excited. Although I will say this though, Matt, as we're ready to delve into this, with the 6 quarterbacks getting drafted in the first round, and obviously not everybody's going to play right away, and a little bit of the musical chairs, I found more optimism on this list than normally. I'm looking like, oh my God, there's like 13 teams I don't want any part of. Right now, there's like 5 or 6 teams I'm probably trying to steer away from. I found myself ranking some offenses I like a fair amount, like in the high teens or in the low 20s. Yeah. And I'm like, geez, I could see things popping for this team. One or two things need to go right. They need to find a left tackle. They don't have a reliable over the middle receiver. You know, some teams don't know who their quarterback is, stuff like that. But this feels more of an optimistic middle of May listing than maybe it might have been in prior seasons.
I am super curious, you know, just giving your list kind of a once over before jumping on the pod here. I agreed with your sentiment there that there's a lot of pretty good offenses in the league. There's a lot of potentially pretty good at ecosystems. We know it won't work out that way, right? We know that by October, November, when we're setting lineups, there's not going to be that many ecosystems that truly hit the high end of the range of outcomes. There's going to be some of these teams that turn it, whether it's injuries or just it didn't work out the way we thought. You know, a rookie quarterback doesn't play up to standard. A veteran changing teams is not as good as we thought. It's not going to work out that way. The picture's not going to be optimistic. So I'm curious, Scott, when we go through this, where we can sort of, you know, spot maybe some tier breaks or just like generally where we sort of finally arrive at a point, because I'm telling you, I get down to 18, 19, 20 on your list, and I'm like, you know what? These teams are actually not too bad, and I can see it working out, but let's waste no more time. Let's get into this here. I just want to go five by five, like groups of five here, talking through your fantasy team power rankings. Now, Scott wants me to mention that these are written in pencil right now. Scott and I are basically talking through the rough draft of this. He is going to have an article version. I appreciate you, you know, saying that you tip your hat to me for basically giving you more work to do, inspiring our boss to give you more work, Scott. So I appreciate you saying that nicely, but Scott's going to have the written version of this on the website. So make sure you check that out. Well, let's call it by the end of the week, but let's jump into here into the first five teams on your list. Scott Pienowski, number one, San Francisco 49ers, number two, Philadelphia Eagles, number three, Baltimore Ravens, number four, Detroit Lions, number five, Miami Dolphins. So Scott, I throw those five teams at you here. I don't think there's a ton of surprises, but maybe which two or three teams here really stand out to you that you want to flesh out a little?
Yeah, I want to say that I could have gone San Francisco, Philadelphia in either order. And I'm really curious to see what Saquon Barkley has left in the tank. He wasn't too happy about the way the Giants said, no, we're all set with you. You know, go wherever you want to go. So he basically takes a very short ride to Philadelphia, and those would be interesting when they match up twice a year. If you want to rank Philadelphia first, I don't have a problem with it. We all know how great the Niners system is. Brock Purdy is good enough. He's surrounded by Shanahan and these wonderful skill talent. I don't think anybody's tuning in today to figure out, hey, are the 49ers any good? The Eagles maybe have a little bit more just intrigue because there's been bigger piece changes. And I guess things would really change in San Francisco if they make a trade, although I don't think they're going to. But they did draft receivers, so it's a possibility. We can't discount it. The team I want to talk about, Baltimore, there's a lot to talk about with Baltimore, but Detroit. And look, I've lived in the Detroit area for over 20 years now. They just had the NFL draft, a throng of humanity went well. There's going to be more big events coming to Detroit. It's a renaissance time in Detroit. Red Wings just missed the playoffs. The Tigers have a winning record this year. And we saw last year the Lions coming just a couple of plays away from going to the Super Bowl. You could really argue they should have won that game. Everything kind of went wrong for them in the second half. But what happens usually to teams like that is they get raided. They get raided in free agency. Their coaching staffs get raided. None of that happened. The Lions are bringing the band back together, which is Sun God, Amon-Ra St. Brown in the first round. Sam LaPorta's the consensus number one tight end on everybody's Yahoo ranks, which are up on them. You can go peruse them. It's next to LaPorta. He's got the Kelsey next to him now. 1-1-1-1. We're all recommending Trident. Good backfield. Maybe this is the year Jameson Williams breaks out. And they keep offensive coordinator Ben Johnson, which is, I thought for sure when the season ended, somebody's going to hire this guy, or maybe he didn't find the right fit. Maybe he didn't interview well. I mean, why didn't he get some of these jobs? That's open to speculation. I don't care. I'm just glad that we get to run this back. Now, it's hard to win in the NFL, and the Lions could have another successful year and not get anywhere close to the NFC championship game. There's a lot of good teams in the NFC, but I can't wait to draft Amon-Ra St. Brown in the first round. I can't wait to draft pieces of this backfield. Jared Goff is a good enough quarterback if you're going cheap on quarterback, and a really good quarterback too in Superflex. I don't know how to price LaPorta because we're just so used to rookie tight ends not doing much. The guy was fantastic, a little bit touchdown heavy. That makes us nervous. But I mean, I'm going to rank them aggressively. I have a feeling I may not end up with a lot of Laporta shares because I just usually don't go for the vanity tight end. But this is an offense that has everything, to the point that if Jameson Williams popped, it almost feels like a cherry on the top of the sundae. I think this is a great offense, even if they get nothing from Williams, which they pretty much haven't for the last couple of years. Imagine if Jameson Williams becomes the first round talent that they drafted him to be. I cannot wait to watch Detroit Lions football in 24.
Yeah, I totally agree with basically everything you just said there. I think the interesting thing is Jameson Williams, which is, you're right, it's a great way to say it, that any sort of production from him would be gravy, would be a cherry on top, not just because he hasn't done anything really consistently at this point in his career. So really that he's kind of, I think, has to be viewed as a luxury asset. But, you know, I had a big conversation with my buddy James Coe about Jameson Williams the other day where I was saying that, like, yeah, they're kind of counting on him, right? Because he is the clear-cut second receiver. They didn't draft another receiver. They didn't bring in a veteran to replace Josh Reynolds. Like, I don't imagine that DPJ is really going to, Donovan Peoples-Jones is going to push Jameson Williams for snaps. But, like, they're, quote, relying on him, and, like, under no circumstances is he going to rise any higher than fifth in the pecking order, right? He's never going to touch the ball more than St. Brown, or touch the ball more than the running backs, or touch the ball more than Sam Laporta. So he is a luxury asset, which I think is going to make him a tough guy to kind of rank out in fantasy. I am curious just about, like, the ADPs and the price points on these guys. Like, is there anyone, you mentioned Laporta, and I'm kind of with you, where, listen, he's going to, in early best ball drafts, he's a 27th player off the board. That is pretty aggressive. Just from an overall standpoint, you're going to have to pass up on a lot of running backs. You're going to have to pass up on some good receiver bets in that range. Some people can go ahead and feel comfortable making the plunge. I think you and I, Scott, maybe are a little more hesitant there. Nothing against Sam Laporta. It's just roster construction. But, like, these running backs, from an ADP standpoint, are you comfortable with where Jahmyr Gibbs goes? Because at this point, again, in the overall early best ball drafts, he's like the 12th player off the board, whereas David Montgomery, shoot, we're doing a staff mock draft that we're going to break down with Andy on the next podcast, Scott. At least I will. I got David Montgomery in the 7th round, and it feels like we just did that last year where the, like, there was this huge gap between these guys, and from a usability standpoint, that was not the case.
I'm so glad you brought that up. When we talk about the better offenses for fantasy, a lot of times the question is, how do I draft into this offense affordably? And as much, I love St. Brown. I will draft shares of him this year. I'm sure of it. I love Laporta. I'm probably not going to have the roster construction that allows me that type of vanity tight end at the ADP. I love Gibbs. He's going at the high end of his range. The two cheapest ways to draft into this offense are Jared Goff. And look, I mean, he's probably got a cap ceiling. Last year was probably the best he could realistically do. He doesn't do anything as a runner. Maybe if their touchdown efficiency just dips a little bit, you know, he could easily just be like QB 15, QB 16. But the great way, the affordable way, and you did it in that mock draft, to get into this offense at a reasonable price point is Montgomery, who I don't know that. Now, last year, for about 2/3 of the season, it was like, okay, they're in close. It's Montgomery time. And then later in the year, they accepted that, well, there's no reason why Gibbs can't score some of those touchdowns too. And that became a little bit more balanced as the season went along. And as their trust level maybe went up with Gibbs in those situations. Also, Montgomery had a couple of injuries during the season, which is just common for any running back. But
right,
bottom line, anybody's touchdown projection for David Montgomery has to be like, what, 8.5, 9.5, something like that. They don't want to rely on one running back. They certainly don't expect Gibbs to be any kind of a bell cow. He's going to be somebody who needs to share touches with somebody else. Maybe the price is going to rise in the teeth of draft season, but the idea of getting David Montgomery outside the top 70, as you did, and as the market is allowing right now, I think that's a absolute steal. I want you to put a circle around that, and I want you to gobble up those early shares as they're available.
Last thing in this group, because I don't think too many people have questions about the 49ers, the Dolphins, or the Eagles. The Ravens, though, I will say, I did kind of at least raise an eyebrow at the Ravens being third overall here, Scott, just because I mean, look, Lamar Jackson is a locked-in QB1, although his production was a little bit of a journey last year. If anybody listened to this podcast and how often Andy Behrens wanted to pull his hair out, you know, when people would submit Lamar Jackson to the panic meter, you know, production was a little bit volatile last year. Maybe it wasn't just like peak QB1 stuff. That doesn't mean it can't be this year, but just the reality of what it was last year. Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely, Is that going to be more of a split going forward? Just because, like, I think Likely's too good, right? I think he's too good to not have on the field, but teams struggle to really truly feature a two tight end offense. And then the receiver room, Scott, and obviously Derrick Henry is Derrick Henry, but the receiver room, Scott, I'm at least like, I'm putting like one foot back in the Rashad Bateman camp, because it seems like the Ravens are kind of putting 1 foot back in the Rashad Bateman camp. But like, that's a little risky, because this is a guy who hasn't done a lot. And right now he is clearly the second, like the number two receiver on this roster. It goes Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, Nelson Agholor. Like, is that really an offense that should be ranked third in this list?
Great question. And I openly admit to you, to producer Colin, to editor Jason, that part of why I'm excited to be on this podcast today is we're going to have discussions, and I'm going to tweak some of my rankings based on some of the stuff that you mentioned. And I could easily, when I do publish this piece, I believe it's being published on Wednesday, that I may have Detroit ranked third, and maybe I'll move Baltimore to fourth or fifth. Miami was the number five team, by the way. But I looked at Baltimore, and Jackson's one of those guys. And I realized Jackson, it feels strange to say this for somebody who's won two MVP awards. He's a little bit polarizing in that he doesn't get the passing volume, and they don't run the ball that much to him around the goal. And I think that's actually pretty judicious given his body type. Right. Why not just have somebody else score those touchdowns? There's no reason why Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts have to score double-digit touchdowns every year. I think it's a little reckless and a little crazy to maybe expose them to those types of things. Now, they haven't gotten hurt, although I think Jalen Hurts was playing pretty hurt at the end of last season. I don't know that it's attributable to goal line work, but if I were a Buffalo Bills fan, my heartbeat would be going crazy when they're ahead by 17 points late in a game and Josh Allen is running like his life depends on it. I just don't think you need to play that way. But if you do draft Jackson, he's an every week starter. He can be the quarterback one in any week with just a couple of plays. And I think Derrick Henry's in a situation. He's an older running back, and usually we want to just run away from those guys, back nine players. But I think he's set up in an offense where he's going to fall in the end zone like 11 or 12 times. We loved what Zay Flowers did last year. I think Andrews and Likely can coexist, because I love, obviously, Todd Monken stepped in. They needed a change at the offensive coordinator slot, and Monken put together great schemes. It's still hard to believe that he can go to the Super Bowl. And they played the worst time of the year to play a horrible game against Kansas City. They just did not show up that day, didn't execute. That's, you know, it's football. It happens. But I think there's a situation where they could make Likely more of a hybrid player. And I think he and Andrews can coexist, because I believe in Monken. And I also, and I know you're the last of the Rashad Bateman believers. If Bateman has a breakout year, it's not going to be on my team. I'm going to be the last guy who's going to believe in him at this point. But Jackson's a proactive pick. I think Henry, I know we don't like drafting old running backs. This is an old running back I want you to draft. He could not be in a better setup. And he's going to fall in the end zone, I'm telling you, 11 or 12 times. He's going to have a monster year. Andrews is a touchdown waiting to happen. I think Likely, and you were kind of alluding to this earlier, I think his breakout, or his semi-breakout at the end of last year, which is too good. We can't unsee that now. I think he has to have a role in this offense. I think it's going to happen at the expense of maybe the secondary receivers who are lining up. I think Isaiah Likely can basically play as a hybrid receiver this season. I think Todd Monken will find a way to make that work.
All right, let's move on to the next group of five here. And I think there are several teams in this grouping that could actually bump Baltimore out and be a top five team potentially here. Houston Texans, Kansas City Chiefs, Los Angeles Rams, Cincinnati Bengals, and 10 Buffalo Bills. Scott, I will say, the Bills are an interesting team to break down. I feel like we talk a lot about the Bills in the podcast, but which of these teams stick out to you that you want to highlight here?
I wasn't sure how high to go with Houston, because it just seems like they have last year, they hit the two decisions you have to hit. They hit the head coach and they hit the quarterback. And I just feel sorry for Bryce Young. He's going to be compared to C.J. Stroud for his entire career. Now, Bryce Young is 1-0 against C.J. Stroud. Don't forget that. But that's about the only thing that
can't
went
take
right.
It, can't take it away from
you
him.
Can't take it. Yeah, the game was like a 15-13 slugfest. But, I mean, C.J. Stroud did it last year. We were banging the drum for Nico Collins. I wish I had seen Tank Dell coming. I ended up with some shares in free agency, but some people maybe were more proactive about him before the season. But to add Stephon Diggs to this room, and you have a decent tight end, Dalton Schultz, and then you get, and this is, again, you have to divorce yourself from real life value and fantasy value. I'm not sure exactly how great of a real life back Joe Mixon is anymore, but he's set up on a team where he's going to get the majority of the work. And we know so much of running back value is just figuring out where the volume goes. And every team is coming to the stadium thinking, how do we stop Stroud? How do we stop Diggs? How do we stop Nico Collins? How do we stop Tank Dell? They're not thinking about how do we stop Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon can have a mediocre season. Joe Mixon could average 3.9 yards a carry and still wind up being like running back 6 or running back 7 because he's going to get so much work and they're going to live in the red zone. And again, this team right now is 6 on my sheet. This is the pencil sheet. I got to put the stuff in pen tomorrow. I could easily move them up. They are a darling team. The arrow pointed up. They made the playoffs for crying out loud last year. Ahead of schedule by a year or two. Now some people say, well, what about the sophomore slump? You hope they don't get too high on everything they did last year. And, teams are going to have more time to game plan them off season, all that stuff. If they knew how to stop CJ Stroud, how to make him play badly, they would have done it last year. I could not be. Look, it's a very crowded bandwagon, but you save me a seat on that one. I can't wait to watch the Texans play this year, assuming that Dell's okay after that gunshot. A very scary story there, but it seems like they have everything. Maybe I'd like a more electrifying back, but with this passing game, who cares? Let Joe Mixon have 17 carries for 70 yards. I'll live with that. They're going to throw the ball all over the yard. I can see Stroud throwing for 5,000.
Yeah, for sure. And the fact that they also have that offensive coordinator play caller continuity that you highlighted with Detroit. The fact that they were able to bring back Bobby Slowick, that's huge. That CJ Stroud's not, even if they promoted somebody from within, that he doesn't have a new voice in his ear in year two. That's critical. I'm with you that Mixon is currently RB16 in early best ball drafts, according to Fantasy Pros consensus ADP. That's fine, right? Like he's not going to probably outkick that by too much, but perfectly plausible pick there, just attaching a running back to a good ecosystem. Man, this receiver room rules, Scott. And I'm curious, do you have a lean on how this room is going to play out? Because, again, early drafters seem to have this at pretty convincingly, Nico Collins, wide receiver 15. He's the top dog here. Stephon Diggs at wide receiver 17. And then there's a pretty actually decent gap to Tank Dell at wide receiver 26. I know how I kind of stand on this room. Do you have sort of a lean on how you think that distribution is going to go?
I think the early consensus leans are pretty good, but I know Diggs is getting up to an age where you get a little bit nervous about him. And obviously he was not a productive player in the second half last year. He was really good maybe the first 6 or 7 weeks, and then he fell off the map. But this would be a joke. I'm a Red Sox fan, Boston sports fan. It used to be a joke that when Manny Ramirez would kind of get in a rut with the Red Sox, that they would just tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, Manny, you just got traded to Boston, and give him a fresh start. I mean, nobody meant seriously. But when they actually finally did trade Manny Ramirez out of Boston, he got traded to the Dodgers 1 year, 2007, 2008, something like that. And I think Manny hit 396 for the Dodgers, something crazy. He even got some MVP votes, even though he only played about 53 games for LA. And remember the divorce that Diggs had with the Vikings? It went sour. He couldn't wait to get to Buffalo, and they got the happiest, most engaged version of Stephon Diggs. And things soured. A lot of different reasons why. He's on a new team with a new quarterback. This is not an apples to apples comparison, but just think of like Randy Moss, how unhappy he was in Oakland. Now, that was a losing team. Buffalo obviously was a playoff contending, a Super Bowl contending team the whole time Diggs was there, but I think Stephon Diggs is getting that change of scenery, getting a new quarterback, getting whatever was wrong with his relationships in Buffalo, it's gone. He's on a new team, and now it's on him. He's got something to prove. If he plays poorly, he can't blame it on Buffalo. It's gets to be blamed on Stephon Diggs. I think he has a nice bounce back season. I will draft Collins before Diggs, but I think they're going to go. It's going to be the dog whistle draft that when one of them gets taken, it's going to trigger somebody else in the room to take the other guy. And you want exposure to CJ Stroud. I think there's definitely a separation between those two guys and Tank Dell. It's not that I don't like Tank Dell. I think they're all can be weekly fantasy starters, but this is going to be. I also think Stroud has a decent chance to get ridiculous volume too. He's going to have efficiency and volume. I cannot say how much over the moon. In fact, I have them 6 in pencil. They may be jumping a couple of teams by the time I commit to Penn on Wednesday.
Sounds like you're about to have him jump a couple of teams. And I'm with you that if Tank Dell wasn't coming off an injury, you know, even before the shooting, which obviously was a terrible situation, but if he wasn't coming off an injury, maybe this would be even tighter between these guys. But I mean, just flat out, Nico Collins played like one of the best receivers in the league last year. So even having him at wide receiver 15 is conservative. Stephon Diggs, I think, is going to be a better. He's not going to be the same fantasy player he was there, but he is going to really help that drop back pass game, which, like you said, all of it just really comes back to CJ Stroud, which is really the big, most enticing piece from that offense. Again, I feel like we talk about the Chiefs a lot. We talk about the Bengals a lot. Even the Bills, we talk about a lot. I will just throw the Rams out here, not as kind of my pushback team here. I'm very into drafting Puka. I'm very in on Matthew Stafford as like a late QB1. The backfield definitely gets a shakeup potentially with Blake Corum in there. Kyren Williams could still stand to lose like 25% of the work he saw last year and still be a fantasy, maybe not league winner, but a needle mover if we want to just parse words out there. The only thing I would say about the Rams that worries me, Scott, is I do think they're a little bit fragile. Like Cooper Kupp. Yeah, is the cheese going bad on Cooper Kupp, to use one of your sayings, right? Like, if, and once the cheese goes bad, as the Scott Pienowski saying goes, it doesn't suddenly go unbad, right? Have injuries stacked up to the point? Has he started to lose a little bit as a player? Because if he has, Tyler Higbee's coming off serious injury at tight end. I don't think he's going to be like ready to rock in week one. And like, really, is Tyler Higbee a needle mover? They have like DeMarcus Robinson and Tutu Atwell behind Puka and Cooper Kupp. I just worry that this ecosystem is a little bit fragile. We start to take away like one piece. We're looking at maybe a potential Jenga situation.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Rams, because they were a difficult rank for me. And I initially had them lower on the list, but then I'm like, well wait a minute. I love Puka. I think the Corum effect on Williams is being a little bit overstated. I think they certainly want Corum to come in and have a sizable role. He'll be drafted in every fantasy league. But Williams was so good last year, and I realize he's a little bit maybe undersized to be a true bell cow, but he was too good at too many things last year for Sean McVay to say, well, okay, those plays all worked, let's not run them anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I still think he belongs. I'd be comfortable taking him or considering him strongly at the round one, round two turn. I'm not going to take him. Some people maybe before the draft are taking Williams 7, 8, 9, something like that. I'm not quite there. But if I got him any point in the second round, I'd feel great about it. So this ranking, having them in my pencil ranks at team 8, that's based on Williams keeping most of last year's stats and Nacua being totally legit and Stafford having some value. I don't know. You mentioned Kupp. He's going to be one of those. I think he was a polarizing player into last season. And that last year, I thought I had a big fade on the Rams, and a lot of it was nervousness about Cooper Kupp. That second thing was right. The fade of the Rams was gigantically wrong because you know, Williams and Nacua were probably the two most important out of nowhere fantasy players last season. Not drafted in a lot of leagues, or if they weren't, you know, guys, some people were spending just about all of their fab budget on them after 1 week, turned out to be the right move. It seems like forever since they had Cam Akers on that team. This is, I do these power rankings, these team power rankings quarterly during the season. And I can easily, you mentioned the Jenga pieces to this team. This could be the type of team that's a top 10 team on my list when the season starts. And then when I do it in October, they're like 23 or something because Nacua got hurt or Stafford got hurt or Williams is sharing more with Corum than we initially thought or something like that. So this is I think even though I still think they belong in the top 10, there's a lot of volatility here. There's a lot of downside risk. And also Stafford, you know, he's had injuries in his career. He had a really messy season 2 years ago. It looked like this team maybe was really close to reboot mode. They won the championship. That's fine. That flag will fly forever. I had no idea they could rebuild this quickly. Nacua, of course, becoming a target dominator, a target hog right out of the box. It's just so rare you see that. We are in an age now where receivers can be great right away. But what Nacua did with no draft capital really whatsoever was shocking to me. I'm still trying to figure it out. And I had none of it too, by the way. So all those Sunday nights we talked about, Puka had 11 more catches. I got no benefit from that.
Never for Scott.
I enjoyed it as a football fan. But I think you really nailed it, that there's a ton of volatility with this team, and there is not a floor. The Rams do not have a floor. This could easily fall apart.
Well, yeah, and look, I know Rams fans or people are going to say like, hey, that could happen for any team. I just think that this team is particularly susceptible to that because I think there is a little bit of a lack of depth on this team.
And that's also, you know, that's like the pro and the con, the gift and the curse of a narrow usage tree, right?
Right.
We love it because, oh, okay, yeah, it's all the targets are going to these guys and all the touches are going to these, you know, it's just a very limited distribution. That's great. If those guys get hurt, if Puka Nacua gets hurt, there's no Puka Nacua 2.0 off that I can see anyway. That's ready to step in. I mean, obviously, there's players we don't know a lot about or players who end up being a lot better than we expected. But generally, when a running back gets hurt, somebody will inherit the touches. And sometimes the production doesn't fall off that much because a lot of the sleuthing for fantasy football running backs is just figuring out who gets the ball and who gets the high value touches as well. But usually, like if the Dolphins lose Tyreek Hill, they're screwed. If the Chiefs lose Travis Kelce, they're screwed. You don't have somebody who's going to step. Maybe the Ravens were a rare example where Andrews went out and then likely, although he's a different kind of tight end, was ready to play really well. And also last year is just kind of funny. Some of the teams, all the quarterback injuries. I think one of the reasons why optimism is more in play for us this year, Matt, we saw so many quarterback injuries last year, and we're at a time where the league has never been more proactive trying to keep these quarterbacks on the field. I think a lot of those injuries were just flukish things that are unlikely to happen this year. I think the quarterback injury rate will be a lot less significant in 2024. And you know me, I'm not like some screaming optimist just for the sake of being optimistic. But I think last year we ran bad with quarterback injuries. I think I'd be very surprised if it was a similar run bad this year at that position.
All right, this next group of five carries a lot of volatility, in my opinion, where I could see them going up. I could definitely see some downside risk for all of these teams. Maybe save your 15th ranked team here. But all right, 11 to 15. Indianapolis Colts, 12 Minnesota Vikings, 13 New York Jets, 14 Dallas Cowboys, 15 Green Bay Packers. I want to start at the top here, Scott, and ask you about the Colts because, whoo, buddy, like I've been saying, I've got to try to talk myself down off the Indianapolis Colts because it is very easy to get excited about what they've got on paper. I'm the one that took Anthony Richardson in our mock draft. I expected to have to give Andy Behrens like a full justification for going Anthony Richardson. And I think the sixth round I ended up going with Anthony Richardson. But I love the receivers, the whole thing. I thought I was going to maybe have to be talked down from Colts optimism, but 11th overall team here, Scott, that is very bullish on the Colts.
And we've seen it. It's not unusual for if you land on the right quarterback, if you had Patrick Mahomes in the breakout year, if you had Josh Allen in the breakout year, if you had Jalen Hurts in the breakout year, a quarterback can be somewhat of a league winner too. We're so programmed that like, okay, in the NFL, it's all about the quarterback. In fantasy, the quarterback's the least important player. I think we've moved away from that when we see these the floor you get from a running quarterback, a quarterback who can score those cheap touchdowns. And we were starting to see Richardson really spread his wings before that early injury. I talked about Houston getting the two big decisions, right? Coach and quarterback. And I think everybody thinks that Shane Steichen was the right man for the Colts job. He had a great first year, and they kept it together, even with Richardson getting hurt and having to play Gardner Minshew the majority of the season. They were still a competitive team. And Richardson, we saw enough of Richardson that it sure seems like he was the right pick. And what's he doing? He's handing off to Jonathan Taylor. He's throwing to Michael Pittman. The support guys are good. They got Mitchell in the draft, a speedster, indoor team, gettable division. It's obviously it depends on Richardson's development and depends on Richardson's health, but I'm ready to follow Shane Steichen into a burning building. And from what I saw the first month of last season, I'm pretty much there with Anthony Richardson too. And I'm encouraged that we're on the same page. As you said, you took him early in that mock draft that we did and look for Andy Behrens' piece on that. I think you're going to do a podcast on it as well.
Yes.
And that's the great thing about, Matt, we do all these rankings. We talk about all this stuff theoretically. The great thing about drafting, that's when you figure the stuff out, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, how do I really feel about this? A ranking is just a bunch of names on a paper. And then when the clock is ticking and you actually have to make a pick and put your name to it, or you're in a best ball draft and there's money involved and the fishbowl happens and it's like, okay, I'm drafting against the whole world and everything. That's when you find out sometimes how you feel about things. So maybe you learned something about yourself when you took Anthony Richardson, but I think this could be just one of these pairings. If 4 or 5 years go by, I'm going to be like, oh, man, isn't the AFC sick of Shane Steichen and Anthony Richardson just making them look bad? I think this is has a, these guys could be going to the moon.
The high end of the range of outcomes here is so appealing with the Colts. Again, I don't want to keep referencing the mock draft because we are going to do a full podcast with that later in the week with Andy Behrens. But what I learned about myself in that draft, Scott, is that, yeah, when I'm sitting there in round six and I'm thinking, who's going to make a difference for me in fantasy this year? Is it Dalton Kincaid, Alvin Kamara, Aaron Jones, Tony Pollard, Mark Andrews, Tank Dell, Keenan Allen? Those are the names that also came off after in the sixth round. No. Those names are, I don't think, going to give me like the face-melting upside that Anthony Richardson presents. Like, I'm trying to win the league here. I'm not trying to get a solid floor of like, well, running back's starting to dry up. Let me get one more pretty decent playable guy here. No. I think Anthony Richardson truly, again, it's a projection for sure because we didn't see it enough last year. We didn't see it from a full, like, even close to enough. But the brief glimpses of high-end processing and high-end, like, offense just working the offense and working within structure, that was there for Anthony Richardson, and they've just set him up to succeed, man. That receiver trio is so good. Josh Downs, Michael Pittman, Adonai Mitchell, complementary skill sets, and the run game should be good. So I'm glad we're on the same page with the Colts. One nit I would definitely pick in this group, Scott, is I think you should just go ahead and flop the Vikings and the Packers at 12 and 15. I think that counting on the Vikings to roll in like as the 12th overall offense, like, you're just putting a lot of faith in JJ McCarthy there. And I realize that, again, one of these teams has Justin Jefferson and the other team in Green Bay has like kind of an amalgamation of really good receivers, where I have no conviction on how that room is going to split itself out. I'm curious if you do, but from an ecosystem standpoint, I think JJ McCarthy can be okay. Can get the Vikings where they need to go. But like, talk about wanting to follow a guy into a burning building. Like, I want to follow Jordan Love into a burning building this season. And again, there's not going to be as much clarity as, like, I know where the ball's going in Minnesota. I don't know where it's going in Green Bay in terms of just who's going to finish highest in the pecking order. But I want to take the journey of discovery and draft into this team.
Yeah, well said. And I'm glad you brought that up. And certainly the vagueness to where the ball's going in Green Bay did affect the ranking. And if that crystallizes before the season or even during the season, it will give them more fantasy utility. Talking about falling into a burning building, how about Kevin O'Connell? I know it was a small sample size. He got 8.8 YPA from Nick Mullins. He got 8.4 YPA from Jaren Hall. He didn't get anywhere near close to that with Joshua Dobbs, but we had a couple of exciting games with Dobbs. He won a couple of games before he kind of the league solved him, and he went back to being what he should be, just kind of a backup piece. But they did not collapse even without Kirk Cousins. That's a shame Cousins got hurt, because Cousins was going to have a monstrous season. I believe he led the NFL in passing yards before he got hurt. But I believe in – no, I do believe in J.J. McCarthy, you know, five-star recruit. I realize he didn't get a lot of volume at Michigan. They were a team that played balance. He worked in a lot of hitter counts and all that stuff. But even if they have to play Sam Darnold, who speaking of YPA, I mean, he had a pretty good YPA with the Panthers when he last started any significant time a couple of years ago. He actually did not play that poorly in his time with Carolina. And although I did not wish an injury on Nick Mullins, on Brock Purdy, I would have, just as an experiment, loved to have seen what Sam Darnold might have done with maybe a month in the Kyle Shanahan offense. We didn't see that. Now he's with Minnesota. This is a ranking. And again, this is a very clustered tier. And if anybody wanted to have Green Bay and Minnesota flipped, there's certainly a case for the Jets being higher. You know, Breece Hall might be the running back two off everybody's board. Garrett Wilson may end up getting in the first round. I took him, I think, on the turn in our mock draft. I certainly want a redo for that. He would have had a great season last year if Aaron Rodgers didn't get hurt. And I just hope we see a full season of that to see what Wilson is capable of. But Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison was really good as a rookie. They still have a decent backfield. Eventually, they'll get Hockenson back. And Hockenson is kind of a catch and fall guy now anyway. I do think these teams are very clustered, but ultimately, it was my faith in Kevin O'Connell that gave Minnesota maybe the nod, where not everybody, I think a lot of people probably would have had them like a half tier lower, but it's believing in Kevin O'Connell that kept them buoyant in my first rankings.
Last thing on this group, and then we'll move on. We'll take a quick break. Dallas Cowboys 14. if they had insert intriguing day two running back here, Trey Benson, Jonathan Brooks, shoot, even Blake Corum was on this team, how high would they have been? Because in my mind, Scott, it's not that that's holding this team back. It's actually the ancillary pass catchers, which I think are sneaky, very weak for a team that's supposed to throw the ball all over the yard. Like, this could be the year that CeeDee Lamb sees like 200 targets.
So I mentioned the Scott Fishbowl. You can pick your slot, and I'll just show my cards. I was thinking, okay, what's, and I don't like picking first or 12th. I hate that. I want to pick somewhere in the middle. So I'm like, well, what middle slot can I take and feel comfortable I'm going to get CeeDee Lamb?
Mm.
Look, CeeDee Lamb is great. I'm not breaking any news there. But this is set up. Dak Prescott, I think he finished second in the MVP last year, third, whatever. He was a favorite at one point when it seemed like the favorite was ping-ponging every week. Dak Prescott may never be like the guy in the NFL, but he's still, at worst, he's a top 10 quarterback. When he's at the, you know, the higher end of his range, he's a top 5, top 6 quarterback. There's no reason why they couldn't go to a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott. He's certainly good enough in my mind. And he is going to pepper CeeDee Lamb off the bus. First snap, second snap, first series, they're ahead, they're behind. And CeeDee Lamb just can't be covered. I think we could see, when they first started counting targets, it wasn't that unusual to see 170, 180, 190, 200 target seasons. And as passing trees have become wider and offenses have realized that maybe we just shouldn't force the ball to our best player all the time if he's double covered and other guys are open and we have more people on the route and the combinations are more complicated, the game is different now. I get that. There's a reason why nobody gets 204 targets anymore. I can see it happening on this team. The reason the Cowboys aren't higher is because I'm over the moon to draft Lamb, open-minded to draft Prescott. I feel gross saying this. I think Zeke could have a bad year and maybe score 8 touchdowns and maybe have like 950 total yards and wind up, it'll be like, I never felt that good about him and he was running back 19 or something. Oh, okay, fine. Jake Ferguson's not a bad player. But really, Lamb's the only guy, the only pound the table, I got to have CeeDee Lamb in my life this year. I don't feel that way. Dak, I'm neutral to. I'm not putting him down. It's just, it's a deep position. There's nobody else in this offense I want to arm wrestle anybody out of the way for. And when I did the rankings, I'm like, do I really have the Cowboys that low? And then I'm like, thinking, well, other than CeeDee Lamb, who am I going to my draft all excited to get? And the answer is nobody.
I wonder how often phrases like gross, doesn't feel good, not pretty are going to be used for Ezekiel Elliott fantasy analysis this summer. I would wager quite frequently. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're going to run through the second half of Scott's fantasy power rankings. All right, we're back. Teams 16 through 20 here, 16 Chicago Bears, 17 Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 18 Seattle Seahawks, 19 Atlanta Falcons, and 20 Jacksonville Jaguars. I'll tell you what, Scott, I'll give you your pick of which team to talk about here, because I think any of these teams could be pretty interesting from a fantasy perspective, sort of going back to what we were talking about at the top, where there's a lot of optimism around the league right now.
With the exception of maybe Jacksonville, I feel like the teams I have 11 to 19, you could just shake them up, put them in a hat, you know, put them in the Yahtzee, you know, container and roll them out. And any ranking would make sense, right? I mean, Atlanta has all those great skill players and now they don't have Arthur Smith. And I know they, you know, they did the crazy thing. They drafted Penix. Nobody can really understand it, but Kirk Cousins is still a high functioning player. They have a lot of guys that want to draft, and I was really tempted to go higher on them. Tampa Bay, Mike Evans is just going to be great until he retires. Baker Mayfield had a comeback season. Dave Canales had a lot to do with that. He's obviously gone to Carolina now. He'll try to, after Geno Smith 2 years ago, after Baker Mayfield last year, we'll see what he can do with Bryce Young. But Evans is always great. I think Godwin has a bounce back year. Rashad White will have a little bit more competition for the ball, but we know his volume is pretty safe. Green Bay, as we met, well, I guess they're in the previous tier, you know, with Love and those receivers. They're interesting. Chicago, again, I defer to everything Barron's has said about them. And Caleb Williams steps, the unusual number one overall pick, who steps into an offense that's really, really good. The team I don't know what to do with. The team that I know they're talented, and I'm like afraid that these guys could beat me, but I'm afraid to draft them, is Seattle.
Yeah.
Because DK really soured me last year. We've always been Lockett fans. but he's getting into an age where you start to get nervous. He could be headed towards one of those cheese seasons we talk about. And JSN, Jackson Smith and Jigba, it's only a year. You don't want to get a gavel and say, okay, you know, JSN is this or he's that. We don't know yet. But a year ago, Brian Hartline was telling people, yeah, we've had unbelievable receivers here. JSN is the best of those guys. I don't think anybody feels that way now. And think about what that state, and I realize that, and you know this more than anybody, that they do different things well, and they play different versions of the wide receiver position. And obviously JSN went to a team that already had two people who can really play, and the offensive line got hurt right away, and Geno kind of lost his mojo. So the run out wasn't pure. But to say, what nobody would say now, okay, well, let's look at Ohio State receivers. You could have Garrett Wilson. You could have Chris Olave. You could have JSN. You could have Marvin Harrison Jr. Nobody's taking JSN first. No. And I realize also.
And they shouldn't have been this time last year either. I liked JSN as a prospect, but like was always like, okay, guys, come on. Like, in no situation is, even when Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave said it to me at the Super Bowl, I was like, come on, bros. Like, you guys were better prospects than he is.
For sure. And to be fair, I don't know the context of when Hartline gave that quote. Maybe somebody calls him up. They're doing a JSN hype piece, and he just wants to promote his player. You know, he wants to say good things about a player who came through his program. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And you know, sometimes people say comparisons are the thief of joy and everything. But I'm curious what your data and what you're tracking and all the great work you do over at RP. What's kind of the state of the union address on JSN?
Yeah, you know, and it's great timing because I actually literally just wrapped up his sample a couple days ago. And what's funny is, like, I come away from his rookie season thinking he was fine. But, like, what does fine do? What does that do for you? You know, like, if you just look at some of his overall metrics, success rate versus man, zone, press, like, he was fine. He's in a pretty good range for all of those. All those metrics. Like, I think he was a good NFL player as a rookie isolated from surroundings. And you mentioned some of the surrounding issues. Number one, there was just no situation, as much as I like JSN as a prospect, where he was going to come in and steal targets from DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, because those guys are just too good and they're too established and their roles are just too different and a little more Geno-ish than JSN's role in that offense last year, which is never going to happen. And secondly, the fact that they lost both of their starting tackles so early in the season. Charles Cross eventually came back, but I don't know if he was ever fully himself. And Abe Lucas, like, he was rotating with Jason Peters, who's like 40 years old at different times of the year because of the injuries. So that pass protection, I think, was sneakily the biggest reason that this really aerial unit never got off the map last year, never really got going. Is that going to be different this year? This is going to be a very different offensive attack overall, Scott. Like, you mentioned Michael Penix, who's the Atlanta Falcons quarterback. I think Michael Penix has to write Ryan Grubb, the offensive coordinator from Washington, a thank you note for just really giving him an offense that was constantly asking him to push the ball down the field. And Penix answered the challenge, even if he wasn't always the most accurate doing it. I think that's really fascinating. Now, Ryan Grubb is the offensive coordinator now for the Seattle Seahawks. To see these three receivers thrown into this offense is going to be super fascinating. So again, state of the state with JSN is he was fine as a rookie. I don't think he was as bad as some of the per, you know, target or per route metrics are going to make him look. He also did miss offseason time as well with the wrist injury. So I still feel pretty good about him as a player. I don't know if I think the ceiling expectations maybe just got a little bit out of whack last year. I think he's still going to be a good, viable NFL player that I'm willing to draft this year because I'm intrigued with what this offense under Ryan Grubb, an aggressive vertical passing offense, is going to do to a lot of these receivers.
His global ADP JSN right now is wide receiver 40. Just to put that in context, names ahead of him, Jordan Addison, Chris Godwin, DeAndre Hopkins. Names behind him are Marquise Brown in Kansas City, which is obviously fascinating. Deontay Johnson, a longtime RP favorite, but he goes to Carolina. Christian Watson coming off a lost season. How do you feel JSN fits with some of those guys? Could you see yourself drafting him over those guys? Or were there one or two names in that list that jumped out at you?
Yeah, I could definitely see myself drafting him over some of those guys. I mean, Jordan Addison, I could see myself drafting him over Jordan Addison. I could see myself drafting him over Chris Godwin, kind of depending, right? Mm-hmm. I like Deontay Johnson. Of course, I like Deontay Johnson. I think he's going to get a lot of targets, but like you mentioned, the situation's not there. So I think it's a pretty fair bucket of receivers for him. And again, it's just sort of going to depend on what we think the target projection is going to be, because it's just, it's going to be a crowded room, but they're going to open it up a little bit more this year than I think they have previously. Any other teams stand out to you in this group before we move on to the next one?
I'm not going to say more about Chicago, because you guys have just beaten them, you know, into the ground. They're obviously the hottest team right now with changes, and it's just hard to know what how much does Allen have left? How much do they get from the rookie That's receiver right one. Away? Yeah. The DJ Moore is probably the most common player I'll draft on that team, but just once I want to see the Bears get the quarterback right. I mean, I know Jim McMahon was kind of the right guy for the 80s Bears, but there was always a run first team and a team that had a generationally great defense. They famously never had, I think, a 4,000 yard passer, right? I mean, there's the one franchise, and you could argue they have as much history as any franchise in the NFL. They've never gotten quarterback right. Just once can they get quarterback right.
I would also just throw out the Falcons at 19 here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They have a player going off the board 7th overall in early best ball drafts in Bijan Robinson. They have a wide receiver going off the board 12th at the position in Drake London. Mm-hmm. And Kyle Pitts is still tight end 6 in early best ball ADP. So, I mean, that's it. Like, there's not a lot of other supporting pieces in this offense. And really, we just want Kirk Cousins to be an elevator. We're not asking him to carry our fantasy teams. But it is interesting with all of that optimism on these players that you've kind of got them at 19 here.
Yeah, I think maybe they should be higher. Maybe I'll move them over Green Bay or Chicago. Again, and that reflects how neatly batched this bucket is. Let me just ask you just a silly question that we can ask in May. Season is over. And we're going to look back and say, you know what? In retrospect, the one Falcon guy I should have gotten all my teams was X. Who is your gut feeling that guy is?
I mean, Bijan's the easy answer, right?
Kind of the cheat code. Because if Bijan hits the high end of his range, he's running back 1 and he's on right. All the magazine covers next year. That, as much as we can like Drake London, is like a cap to how great he can be, because there's always going to be other pieces in that offense.
But especially, Scott, when he's going off the board at wide receiver 12. Like, mm-hmm. I love Drake London, and I think he is good enough to have that type of season. We're still we are banking in a lot of progression from him just as a producer. Again, I think the talent is there, but if he has a wide receiver, let's just call it wide receiver 17, 18 season, I guarantee you people that are taking him 20th off the board in early drafts are going to be filling the panic meter, are going to be full on complaining about what Drake London is doing. But it's like, based on what he's been so far in his career, that is a huge jump. So I just think that the guy there that's going to easiest like knock it out of the park is Bijan Robinson. I think this and Kyle Pitts is such an unknown. I can't really say him either. But,
so
but
I'll cheat. I'll cheat with a follow up question. If somebody said, I'm a big Falcons player, a team fan, I want to get somebody in this receiver room slash tight end room, whether it's pay up for London, post hype on Pitts, value pick on Mooney, who would you steer them to out of those three guys relative to what they cost right now?
I don't care about like any of the pass catchers beyond Pitts or London from a fantasy perspective. Okay. I'd still steer people to London just with a little more caution than maybe the 20th overall player on the board. But again, he's good enough to have that season. I think Pitts is fine where he's going. Like, I think he's a guy I wouldn't try to draft around him, but I wouldn't say like I am putting a stamp on the 60s where I'm definitely getting Kyle Pitts there. That's kind of my thought on that.
That's why I also say that you guys, man. The NFL draft never disappoints. I rewatch your reaction to the, and I like Michael Penix Jr. I do. I'm not picking on him, but it was just so much fun watching the live draft coverage of you and Robinson and all those guys after Atlanta. Just, you know, I mean, they just gave us something we're going to talk about forever.
I still don't think I've ever hit or will ever hit that octave again, Scott, than I did when Michael Penix Jr. came off the board. And I just said what afterwards in a very,
I never understood it. You know, Cousins was totally reasonable. Penix was totally reasonable. You have to pick a lane. You can't you can't go to the car dealership, fall in love with two cars, and buy both cars. You have to buy one of them.
All right, next group here. Cleveland Browns, 21. New Orleans Saints, 22. 23. Arizona Cardinals, 24. Pittsburgh Steelers, 25 Washington Commanders. Scott, if you had to pick one of these teams to really outkick expectation and give us like multiple fantasy starters, who do you think it would be?
Arizona looks like a lot of fun, right? I mean, people think Harrison is just plug and play. Trey Benson is somebody who's going to be drafted proactively. Trey McBride looked like a difference maker at the end of last season. And we're not that far removed from Kyler Murray being like an MVP candidate. This is going to be a fun team. And this is, I think, if Harrison's as good as people think right away, and if Benson is ready to be a factor, even if he's not going to start, James Conner is just going to play. I know Conner's still in his 20s. It feels like he's like 37. I don't know how that's true, but I believe what I saw from McBride at the end of last season. And this is going to be a lot of AFC West football. It's going to be fun to watch this year. It's just going to be cool to see Kyler being Kyler again. I think he had the confidence beat out of him. He was injured for a while. He had a really lousy set of receivers he had to deal with. And for whatever reason, they couldn't make Hollywood Brown, his college running mate, work last year. But there's a lot of upside with this team. And also, I'll mention, Jaden Daniels has a wide range of outcomes, but we know he's probably going to run the ball a lot. And you and I have always been just begging, just please.
I was going to say, Scott, what's going to take for me to get you one last ride on the Terry McLaurin,
John
Dotson train?
We've been waiting, and talk about, the great receivers you played at Ohio State. I mean, obviously, Terry McLaurin's on that list, the great 2019 draft. He goes in the third round. Nobody works harder. Nobody's smarter. And, even last year, right, wasn't it just nice when Jacoby Brissett came in and the ball was on time? I mean, Jacoby Brissett looked like Mark Rippon 1991 compared to, Sam Howell was just kind of over his skis. And, for some reason, we had to watch Sam Howell lead the league in pass attempts last year. That was not fun. I mean, Sam Howell can be a good backup for the rest of his career.
There's a reason Eric Bieniemy is the offensive coordinator at UCLA now, not
for sure. For sure.
Commanders.
I mean, look, Sam Howell's probably just like another Gardner Minshew. He can be fun in small doses. You can date Sam Howell. You can't marry him in Washington. Learn that the hard way. But I'm just dying for Terry McLaurin to have the right quarterback for once. And I hope it's Jaden Daniels. And even last year with Dotson, who was somebody I pushed up my draft board and that collapsed. That was a totally wrong call by me. And it hurt a lot of my teams. But he could still play football. He's still obviously on the front nine of his career. It's Washington's a franchise. Their fans are extremely loyal. They've dealt with that whole ownership situation that's finally mercifully in the past. The nickname's been changed. They had that moment where they drafted RG3 and it looked like everything was taken off, and then he gets hurt in the playoff game and everything falls apart. And they have kind of a wasted decade. It would just be nice to see hope back in play for Washington. I can't wait to move these guys up like 5 or 10. I have to see it. I can't do it on spec.
Yeah.
But there's certainly, and with Arizona, I can't do it on spec either. It's very possible that we could be talking about, you just did your new rankings. Arizona's 11 or something. I mean, that's in play.
Yeah.
I'll mention one other team really quickly. I don't know what to do with the Browns because
that was the team I was going to bring up too.
They're that steakhouse team. It's like, great salads, great entrees, great ambiance, great wine list. How are the steaks? I don't know if they're any good. That's Deshaun Watson. He's the steak. We don't know if he's any good. The rest of this, I mean, David Njoku's a blast. Amari Cooper's fun.
I would argue though that Scott, there, yeah, I'm with you. Like the sides are really good right here at the steakhouse. Okay, they got Amari Cooper, great side. I actually think he's way too low in terms of early baseball drafts. The salad, David Njoku, very good. Love a good starter there. Whatever. But this steakhouse in particular used to have the best sommelier in town. It used to have the guy that you could count on for just consistency, giving you everything you need in Nick Chubb.
And we don't know.
I have no idea what to do with Nick Chubb. And that sucks.
I'm not over his injury. I'm still feeling pain from that. Monday Night Football, Nick Chubb, probably about his favorite player of a have in the NFL, just, works his tail off, never complains, always gets the extra yard, the usage. You go to war with guys like Nick Chubb. You want a guy like that in your corner, whatever line of work you're in. Nick Chubb will be successful in anything he does. Also, why did the Patriots take Sony Michel instead of Nick Chubb when they had the earpiece of all the Georgia coaches? How does that happen? I don't know. I get the idea that Nick Chubb's story, and it sucks to say this, I'm not a doctor. It's going to be one of those, he's not himself. And then he has a big game around Thanksgiving or the big game around, you know, Christmas time. Maybe. And we're all like, oh, next year, I can't wait to get back in on Nick Chubb. I think this is going to be that messy loss in the shuffle year for Chubb. And I'm afraid to draft him. And he's always been like, second round, Nick Chubb, you know, like setting your watch. I miss that, man. And I can't draft him proactively this year. And that sucks.
Yeah, I think there's also a darker outcome where we never get that back because he's 28 years old and this is his second like major knee injury.
That's
so
right.
I was going to argue that Browns at 21, I think you could bump all the way to the bottom of this group here just because, and maybe even below some of the next teams we'll talk about where like Arizona, Washington, you're right. Those are the two to highlight that I think those ecosystems could really jump up. Like New Orleans, there are some players I want to draft on New Orleans. Not super excited, but there are some players I want to draft there. Pittsburgh, some players I want to draft there, even if I'm not overly excited. Cleveland, other than Amari Cooper and I guess David Njoku too, there's not a lot of names I want to click that are in a Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I have Cleveland too high because if you don't trust the quarterback, and I like the support guys, I'm not madly in love with them. I mean, you know, Cooper's a back nine player now. I will say this about New Orleans. They always talk about, oh, Derek Carr, nobody likes him, and the Raiders couldn't wait to get rid of him, and the Saints really aren't in love with him. His stats weren't that bad. And he's actually really good down the street. And look, I know you can go down false windows. You can go down false corridors. You can open false windows. I'm screwing up a metaphor here. But you can trick yourself if you just pick certain segments of production if you don't have a reason to back it up. You know, did the play calling change? Did the left tackle come back? Was there something significant about personnel? What were the opponents like and all that? But is Derek Carr good enough? At this point, I just want Derek Carr to make Chris Olave great, to be good enough to ride along on that train. And if Chris Olave has an Olave season, he's been a little bit better than Garrett Wilson, but we always feel like there's chicken left on that bone. If Olave has the season I think he's capable of having, then Derek Carr is going to have one of those, oh, I never trusted him, and he was like quarterback 13.
All right, final group here, 26 Las Vegas Raiders, 27 Denver Broncos, 28 LA Chargers, 29 New York Giants, 30 Tennessee Titans, 31 New England Patriots, 32 Carolina Panthers. Scott, when I throw these teams out there, immediately I say one of these things does not look like the other because we've got like Will Levis, we've got Danny Dimes, Drew Locke, we've got Bryce Young, we've got Gardner Minshew, Aiden O'Connell, we've got Bo Nix. We've got, you know, the Patriots with Jacoby Brissett and Drake May. And then we've got 28 LA Chargers, Justin Herbert. I don't know, man. I realize that there's not a guy here that I'm for sure drafting because I think the run game could be good. I think the pass game could be good. But who's going to benefit beyond Ladd McConkey and how high can we really get on a second round receiver? But that is just the one thing that stands out to me that it's like, rookie or murky quarterback situations abounding here, 26 to 32, except 28, the LA Chargers.
Yeah, it's well diagnosed by you. Just Herbert doesn't belong with all these other quarterbacks. I feel like Jim Harbaugh is the guy who shows up at the first tee of the golf course, and everybody else has new clubs, and Harbaugh is going to be using clubs that are 15 years old. He's going to run the ball to set up the run. And I mean, we all like Ladd McConkey. I'm pretty sure he graded well in the stuff that you look at. Mm-hmm. And he steps into this opportunity here. And him and Herbert, I think, are going to click right away. But Jim Harbaugh, and I think we all thought it was plausible that maybe they might have drafted Corum. Obviously, he went to the other side of town. But they want to – not that Herbert's not great, but they don't have the personnel to – air it out. They need to be balanced. And Harbaugh's also one of these guys. You know, we're going to win the line of scrimmage and we're going to out physical people. We're going to wear people down and everything. And I've gone from Justin Herbert. I mean, the whole story used to be like a CJ Stroud, Bryce Young story, right? Can you believe Miami took Tua in front of Justin Herbert? What a mistake that was. And now Justin Herbert is going to have all these games. He's going to have a lot of games where he's efficient, but he finishes with like 257 yards and one touchdown. And the Chargers can be like, well, hey, we won. What do we care? They're just not set up to have any kind of volume season for Herbert. And even though I like McConkey, everybody needs somebody to drag them a little bit. There's nobody to drag Herbert. Justin Herbert is basically undraftable for me. And I hate saying that. I even feel like if that contract was tradable, Not that Justin Herbert's a bad player, but I think they would have gotten out of that. I would think they would have gotten out of the Herbert business in a second and started fresh, started with a new rookie court. You know, I think Harbaugh would have been fine with McCarthy, his guy from Michigan. He would have been fine with a lot of quarterbacks, but just the deal. And I don't want to make it out like Justin Herbert's not good, but I feel like the Chargers wanted to see if there's a way to get out of this, and they just realized there wasn't. And so we'll make the best of it. And it's just Justin Herbert, there's no volume upside. You need some volume here. I don't see how he's going to get it. So I'm a guy who was always forever thinking the Chargers are a sleeping giant. This is the year they win the AFC West. This is the year they get the AFC championship game, if not the Super Bowl. And now it's like, I don't know what to make of Vegas. I know they had a bounce after they hired Pierce last year. They don't have an answer at quarterback. They still have a lot of interesting skill guys. Nobody saw Bowers going there, and that's kind of an odd fit. But I think the Chargers, I think Harbaugh will get this straightened out. But it's going to be, here's the thing. When they fix it, they're going to be kind of like what the Titans were with Mike Vrabel, right? They're going to try to 17-13 you to death. And it's just going to be, it's going to be no fun for Justin Herbert managers.
I'm a little like, there's part of me that thinks that, yeah, Jim Harbaugh is going to show up with those like 10-15-year-old golf clubs, and he's going to beat all the guys that spent a bunch of money on the tailor-made clubs and all this stuff. Like, I think that, far be it for me to start throwing out golf analogies, but I think he's going to be, man, part of me just wonders if like, it's, yeah, Ladd McConkey. I think we are counting on Ladd McConkey here. Like, if Ladd can give them 900 yards this year, I think Justin Herbert is good enough. And I think if they run the ball well enough, which maybe Gus Edwards is usable, maybe this Kamani Vidal guy is a sleeper. Could we not? I mean, maybe we could see all these, you know, like Quentin Johnston and Josh Palmer, and like they're signing DJ Chark and MVS. What if these guys are all like 400, 500 yard receivers, and it is a little like Patrick Mahomes-ish? I do think that is possible for the Chargers, but still, I think that gives Justin Herbert a very cap ceiling in fantasy, and like 25, 26, that's the year maybe where they rebuild the pass game a little bit more. But beyond the Chargers, Scott, any other group, let's each pick one offense, and maybe we end up picking the same one from this group, that we actually could squint at and see some real fantasy viability come out of it.
Man, that's hard. I'm going to say the Broncos only because I believe in Sean Payton, and they did get a fantasy viable year from Russell Wilson. And it was, you had to divorce his real life quality of play to what his stats said. And a lot of it was Cortland Sutton with those great boundary plays. And the fact that they just never ran in touchdowns, all of it was through the air. But Peyton was the quarterback. Drew Brees, I think he had that one one Pro Bowl trip in San Diego, but he was not Drew Brees walking Hall of Famer when he went to New Orleans. Famously, he goes to Miami. He fails the physical. Him and Nick Saban doesn't happen. But I mean, you have to give Brees a lot of credit. I'm sorry, Peyton a lot of credit for Brees taking that, you know, two steps up into one of the best quarterbacks we ever saw. A lot of things go into that success, as many parents as we know. But I'm still in on Sean Payton. And remember last year, they lose to Miami, what, week two, week three? They allow 70 points. We were making the case, is Denver the worst team in football, right? And they almost made the playoffs, you know? I mean, Wilson went, I think, 7-8 as a starter, or 8-9 or something like that. I mean, I still believe in Sean Payton. If Knicks is legitimate, or who knows, maybe he pulls a rabbit out of his hat with Stidham, if Stidham has to play for a while, there's still interesting skill talent on this team. I'm going to say the Broncos.
I'll say Tennessee Titans. You look at that offense, it's pretty decent. It's pretty decently talented, right? If the offensive line can can be better, which they drafted J.C. Latham, Peter Skoronski's in his second year. They have Bill Callahan coaching that unit up. That's pretty critical. I don't know what the ceiling fantasy-wise is for all these guys, but it's a pretty viable receiving room. It's not the sexiest. It's certainly not the youngest. But DeAndre Hopkins at X, Calvin Ridley at flanker, and Tyler Boyd just as like a solid slot receiver. I like the theory. Listen, nobody was saying Juju Smith-Schuster is a big slot, or excuse me, that's a Freudian slip there. Nobody was saying that Treylon Burks is a big slot receiver in the NFL more than me coming into the draft. Now it's like, oh, they just moved Treylon Burks to big slot. Yeah, nobody was saying that in these pre-draft write-up except your boy here, because, by the way, he played in the slot in college. He was always destined to be that type of guy. Now, but they don't want it. This coaching staff doesn't want to go through that experience, and understandably so, because Burks hasn't been a good or reliable NFL player. So, like, we're just going to throw Tyler Boyd in there, and he's probably going to be solid, and maybe Burks shows us something this summer, but maybe he doesn't. But so that's a pretty good receiver trio. Chigo Kwanko is a talented guy. Pride just wasn't maximized in the last coaching staff. They have two running backs who can be useful. So I don't know. I could see something. Again, maybe it's not league winning potential, but I could see something coming out of Tennessee.
Yeah, I almost said Tennessee, and I'm glad you brought them up, because this is the sneaky, we're really doing all we can to help our quarterback, to set him up for success. You talked about the offensive line reinforcements, the receiver reinforcements, and then the players like Chig who are around who could take a step forward, a splash play waiting to happen. And I'll say this for Levis, and obviously his rookie year had hits and misses. You know, he has the four touchdowns in the first start, but he had some games where he looked like what he was, an untested rookie. But he was poised. The moment never looked too big for him. And although the receivers he has in this, the first three are all guys who were really good like 3 or 4 years ago, they're different versions of good now. Although I still think Calvin Ridley has maybe a little bit more ceiling than is commonly held. I don't know what's going to take to untap that. He's kind of sneaky old too. But the bottom line is this. There are teams that, and you could only, you know, draft with the picks you have. I mean, every team, like the Patriots really needed a left tackle. They didn't get that left tackle in the draft. Now they have to try to figure that out. Tennessee, it seems like everything they were doing in free agency, or just about everything they were doing in free agency, and everything they were doing with their roster building the last 2 months is like, okay, let's give Will Levis a chance. Let's set him up to succeed. And yeah, I think they definitely could jump a tier here. They could actually be a fun team because they've made logical moves, but not splashy moves, right? Tyler Boyd is not going to be the lead story on, you know, NFL.com when you sign a guy like that. But he's a base player. They need that.
It might be
the consistent routes that he can. Maybe it may. It could be. Is right. But, you know, the Tyler Boyd, you know, 12-yard catch on 3rd and 7. They need that. Hopkins was better last year than I expected. Maybe they'll whisper the right stuff to Ridley, who had a really strange year. It felt like every game for Jacksonville, he either was like terrible or he was wide receiver 8. There was no middle ground. I'd like to see some more consistencies there. And you know, Chig Okonkwo, we've been spoiled a little bit with some rookie tight ends, and obviously Laporta was the biggest hitter of that, but usually tight ends take a while. Why couldn't this be a breakout season for him? Yeah, I don't know what they're getting from Pollard, although maybe Spears is the back anyway, and I'm curious if you have a preference there, but there's more. Tennessee has usually been, okay, we're going to win with toughness and line play, and we have like one guy on offense you get to worry about, maybe two. And that's pretty much it. Now they don't have the Derrick Henry or the A.J. Brown flashy guy anymore. You know, and Tannehill was actually a pretty good player at peak. But maybe the depth here is better than it has been in a long time.
That's what's got me interesting. And I think people might overlook the Titans is just like, it's not the same old Titans of the Mike Vrabel era, which may be good, maybe bad. We will see what happens there. But it is going to be very different. And I'll say this for Will Levis. I keep throwing out the Jameis Winston. Like, this era is Jameis Winston. This generation's Jameis Winston comp for him. Jameis Winston, 25.5% of his passes last year, small sample, were a deep throw, according to Fantasy Points data. Will Levis, 20.8% with much more volume. No, like, the next highest quarterbacks that took over 200 dropbacks last year, it's like Joe Flacco at 14.2%, Justin Fields 14.1%, Deshaun Watson 14%. So with nothing else, Scott, Will Levis is going to push it. But Scott,
and we need that. We need that, man. We're not, yeah, there's so much dinking and dunking. And I'm so glad you brought up Fantasy Points. Buy their data suite. It is so good. You know, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Graham Barfield, Joe Dolan, on and on and on. They have an all-star team over there. And much love to the Points guys who've given us a peek behind the data wall. It's fantastic. I think you'll love it, no matter to what degree you decide to use it. I'm still trying to learn half of it myself, but it's a great data suite. And yeah, I'm in it. Let's, you know, Jameis Winston really isn't in our life anymore. If we can give me a Jameis Winston 2.0, I'm all in.
Hey, if Deshaun Watson can't get healthy, it can't stay healthy. Jameis Winston might just be back in our lives again as the Cleveland Browns.
I'm here for it, man. I enjoyed the heck out of the Flacco experience. I know it was fluky as hell, and what happened in the playoffs, I think everybody was waiting for that shoe to drop. But I don't wish ill on Deshaun Watson. I just want to watch somebody else play quarterback for them. If it's Jameis Winston, I'd be all for it.
All right, Scott, that is going to do it, buddy. Appreciate you doing this. Hopefully, this was instructive for the listener. And for you, Scott, I know you got a piece to file here. Hopefully, this helped crystallize a little bit of your thoughts with these rankings.
It definitely helped. You definitely had impact, just like Jason had impact. Getting excited about the Bears, realizing, oh, yeah, I have them too high. But This is the fun stuff, man. This is where we start to figure out. This is where we're watering the plant, and the plant's going to grow, and we're going to have takes, and then we're going to draft, and we're going to have shares, and we're going to have stances. You know, and this hour plus that we spent was really helpful for me trying to figure out what I think, because I'm not even sure what I think about half this stuff yet, but it's a blast trying to figure it out with you. And I just can't wait for the next 8 months.
Man, if you don't even have to be close to sure about anything at this point in the calendar, Scott, that is for sure. But you all out there, make sure you go read Scott's piece on yahoosports.com. Come on. It's going to be great. See where he ended up filling in some of these teams after we discussed it on the rough draft rankings in this episode. That is going to do it for us today. On Thursday, as I mentioned many times, just did a staff mock draft. Andy Behrens is going to join me to talk through that on Thursday's show. Until then, we're out.